Hey, welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and you, well, you are listening to All Ball, All Basketball, all the time, every week. I have a guest with me. I give you my thoughts. I give you my dreams, my aspirations. And today we're coming to you on a Thursday. It's the day after the Toronto Raptors whooped up on the Golden State Warriors. They've taken a 3-2 lead, and of course, as you probably already know, Kevin Durant is out for Game 4. Klay Thompson is supposed to be back for Game 4. My biggest concern, and maybe this is because when I got to be 30 years old, maybe it was like 32, 33, I remember playing, and I had never been hurt. I have guys on my radio show, which you can listen to daily from 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific. I have guys on my radio show that are always like, well, you were an athlete. You were hurt. Like, literally, knock wood, I've never really been hurt, with this as the exception. When I got to my mid, maybe it was 35, when I got to my mid-30s, all of a sudden, I pulled my hamstring. And, you know, when you're not on a team and you don't have the ability to rehab, you simply feel terrible for a day. Like, you come home and your kids are like, you hurt yourself. Yes, yes, I did. Anyway, so you limp on in, you ice, and then you lay off of it, you stretch it. The way I came back was by doing yoga. You start to try and lift with it. And sometimes it takes like a month off. And I remember I would get hurt, would take time off, and then I would come back and I would do it again. And the thing about pulling a hamstring is, like, it feels at the time like you ripped it in half, even though all of a sudden, like, the strength returns to it and you're fine, like, inexplicably. But there's usually, like, one move or two different bends or twists where it feels like you've had the back of your hamstring actually blown off by a shotgun. And it just comes back. And I can't think that 5 days later, Klay Thompson will be fine. If they don't have a healthy Klay Thompson, how can they possibly expect to beat the Toronto Raptors? And eventually they think they'll get back Kevin Durant, but if he's not back yet, how can they expect to beat the Toronto Raptors? You know, 3-1 seems to be the magic number. Oh, bring him back. But, like, if your calf hurts that bad still, how do you expect to play? And how do you expect to play well when you haven't played in a game in, like, 3 weeks? And granted, we're looking at average guy stuff and trying to measure it up against superstar athletes and how their bodies will respond. But they're not matching up with average guys. They're superstar athletes matching up with superstar athletes. So I think I'm ready to call it. I don't think Toronto is better than the Golden State Warriors. I don't think he's better. But you know what I do think? I do think they're healthier, and because they're healthier, they're going to win this series. Now, I've heard a couple of people say that there is something disappointing about Steph Curry. Like, if you're saying that, boy, you're just making arguments to make arguments. Maybe this is why I haven't been a full-time guy on some of these debate shows. Because I listened to the argument of, well, you know, Steph Curry, he's not this, he's not that. Because it's not just that he doesn't have Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson, Kevon Looney, right? So that's 3 starters. There isn't a human being alive that could be competitive with a championship caliber team if you're down 3 starters. Like, remember, this is essentially what happened to the Cleveland Cavaliers when they lost. They had lost earlier in the playoffs. They had lost Kevin Love, and then they lost Kyrie Irving after game one, and that thing went to 6 games. And, of course, LeBron James was peak LeBron James. But then factor in, what you would have to factor in is Tristan Thompson would have had to have been hurt and missed. And then whoever is the second best player in that series, J.R. Smith, would have had to also been injured. And if that was the case, I'm playing injured. I give no chance. None. So it's not just that you're losing your 2 best scorers, not named Steph Curry. It's the fact that you're essentially starting 3 bench players. Because then as these finals go on, you have to get deeper into your bench. And now you're really dealing with, like, Jacob Evans played last night. Like, damn, I forgot he was on the Warriors. They've been playing. They started Jordan Bell in game one. He didn't even play in game two. He hadn't been playing until the end of the Rocket series, and that was only because of injuries. He'd been so snuggled up with a bone in the doghouse. I take nothing away from Steph playing magnificently and the team not being good enough around him. What I do think is this really hurts anyone's argument about Draymond and Andre Iguodala being Hall of Famers. They're great role players and love the roles and succeed in the roles in which they play with the Warriors. But they can't help carry a team when two starters are down or three starters are down. That's not the makings of a Hall of Famer.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
One other thought here on something happening in college basketball. I love that they're moving the three-point line back. I love that there's a shortened shot clock and an offensive rebound. I think these things are fantastic for the betterment of the game. Fantastic. But the R.J. Hampton thing is weird. Look, we're going to talk about it here with Rashad Phillips, my guest this week. I don't really understand why people are so... Do I think college coaches, all of them, prepare you perfectly for the NBA? Like, no. Different styles, different systems. But I also think that college coaches, by and large, have helped raise, promote, nurtured 18 to 22-year-olds. Like, that's what they do. That's what they've done for their professional lives. And there's a different type of coaching and a different type of teaching, and there's little things that need to be refined. And I think so many players need this. Need it. Absolutely, positively need it. And, but RJ Hampton choosing to do so, choosing to forego it and go to New Zealand, like, all right, I think they thought out the decision. My issue is RJ Hampton came out after announcing he was going to New Zealand and said, yeah, I actually signed the contract a month ago. What is with the dog and pony show? And why at least playfully engage with three schools, Texas Tech and Kansas and Memphis? And I think those schools had a little bit of a heads up that this might happen, but having signed a contract, you don't do that. You don't do that in any business. And if we're going to champion his family for helping him make this thoughtful decision, one that values education, how about one that values, it's just simple. You pick up the phone, you call Bill Self. You pick up the phone, you call Penny Hardaway. You pick up the phone, you call Chris Beard. You go, hey, coach, it's been great getting to know you. I hope to continue to keep this relationship. I'm going to try something different. I'm going to go to New Zealand and play for a year and then get ready for the NBA. And they may try and talk to you out of it. They may offer up some perspective on why they think it's a good idea, why they think it's not a good idea. But they've been told no before. They can be told no again. I just don't understand how somebody's dad doesn't go like, hey, you got to tell these guys. You can't go on national TV and pretend like this is a big decision when the decision's already been made 3 or 4 weeks ago. But this is the social media thing. Everybody else is wrong except the athlete, except the player, where they're the ones that are always right. Let's welcome in Rashad Phillips. Of course, he has his own media company. He also helps cover the Orlando Magic. You can follow him on Twitter. He's got his own YouTube channel. He was a great player at Detroit, played a ton professionally, and we're going to break down some of the players in this upcoming draft and the NBA Finals. Without further ado, my man Rashad Phillips. Rashad, let's start with last night's game. Obviously, it's Steph against the world. He was, he's as good as he can be, considering kind of a one-man band, and you don't have a ton of space. Did we learn anything at all from last night?
We actually got to see how good Steph Curry really is by himself. I think he reminded people that he is a dominant offensive force. I think we did see that. Last night, to me, Doug, reminded me of when Steph was at Davidson and and he had to kind of carry his team. That it was kind of reminiscent of his college days.
I've heard people say, well, this is what it was like for LeBron last year in the playoffs. It wasn't. 2015, no. Some similarities, no Kyrie, no Kevin Love. But again, then you factor in, then there would be no Tristan Thompson or no, you know, there's right. like no starting, like not have Looney. And then you also didn't have right. Andre Iguodala, a healthy Andre Iguodala. Like,
right.
And it wasn't as top heavy a roster as this roster is.
Correct.
Okay, so let's assume Klay plays game yeah. four, but we don't mm-hmm. know about Kevin Durant. How do you mm-hmm. see the series in that situation?
I think Golden State wins that one. I just think that he did miss Klay Thompson more than he missed Kevin Durant, because I really believe that Steph is more accustomed to playing with somebody who's similar like him on the perimeter as of Kevin Durant. He's more of an ISO guy. I don't want to get off subject, but I know Kevin Durant had a 46-point game against Toronto in the regular season, and they lost two. But back to your question, I think with Klay out there, and if he's healthy, if he's 90%, I think he gives them a better opportunity to win game four, because you still got to honor him. He still shoots the ball well enough to – you have to switch the coverages a lot, and it opens it up for guys like Bogut and Cousins. Cousins was asked to do too much yesterday, and he just kind of looks like he's not in game shape yet. So I think Klay on the floor gives Golden State a better opportunity to win game four.
Yeah, you're big on this your narrative is that Steph's points are more impactful,
yeah,
right, than KD's points. Expound on that,
correct,
if you would.
Well, I think Steph's points cut deeper is the term I use, because his ability to make shots at certain times where it's just demoralizing to the defense. I think when Kevin Durant scores, it's like, oh, okay, you know, 7-foot guy, can't block his shot. He's an alien. But when you have a 6'3" guy come down and dance on you and hit a 3-pointer from 35 feet and turn away before it goes in, I think it sinks deeper into the soul of the opposing players. And that's why I think that his points are just – they're more impactful. And his 3-pointers are almost like dunks, Doug. When they go down, the crowd explodes. Even on the road, he even takes the air out of you. Or he pumps the air in you, depending on where he is.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think you're hitting the point but missing the point at the same time.
Okay.
I just think it's basic math that the three is more than two, and it's the calculation we're kind of we struggle with for a long time as basketball mm-hmm. guys, or especially coaches. You know, is the hey, it's actually better to shoot these threes than it is to shoot mid range twos. And I think they can be more impactful because you can make up points quicker. You just can. And when he hits two or three in a row and all of a sudden, three trips equals 9 points, and then you foul. And the most devastating play, I think, in basketball mm-hmm. is the foul on the 3-point shot, right? Because you feel like, you did everything you could and you foul a guy. Now, it's almost like you feel like an idiot when you're a player. You're doing it. You're just trying to do what your coach told you, which is, do not leave this guy. Lock and trail or, no airspace at all.
And you foul.
So I think it's the math to it. Because I would say I would play the other side in that mm-hmm. KD can be ever bit as devastating because he's so good that you can do everything right. And have a guy right there, and he's just bigger and better than you, and he just makes a shot over your best defender, and there's an inevitability with his scoring that can be equally devastating. The difference is the math of a guy who can hit you for 7 or 8 threes as opposed to KD who can make threes, but that's not necessarily what he does best.
Right. I just think that it's the person as well. Like, Livingston – point, if he hit 3 3-pointers, I think his 3 3-pointers is not equivalent to 3 3-pointers from Curry. It may sound strange. It may not make sense math-wise, but as a basketball player, if Sean Livingston hits 3 threes on me and Steph Curry hits 3 threes on me, it's a little different. It holds a different weight.
Dude, if Sean Livingston hits three threes on you, the season should be canceled. I don't believe he's. I'm trying to remember when the last time he hit a three was. I gotta look this thing up while we're talking.
No, he's a mid range guy, but it's just the players. Different players carry different weight with their points. Steph Curry's three pointers are more devastating than anybody else's three pointers in the NBA. Period. Now, there's other guys that have.
By the way, just to help my point, Sean Livingston has had the most threes he hit an entire season. An entire season was in his third year before he hurt his knee in the NBA. He had five threes in the entire season. That's kind of remarkable. Like, here's a guy who, and again, we're getting off on tangents. Sean Livingston is 33, right? He's played 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 seasons in the NBA, which is crazy.
He's hit
30, and he came in as a point guard. He's hit 13 threes in his career. To anybody who says, like, and this is, I want to get with you on this one. To anyone who says you have to shoot threes to play in the NBA today,
That's not true.
Give you Sean Livingston, who is 13 of 73. That's a 0.178 3-point percentage for his entire career. And yet, he's a 3-time NBA champion and has a chance to be a 4-time NBA champion and has a magnificent career. What Sean Livingston signifies to me, and I think Steph does as well, and I talked about this on my radio show, the difference between those guys and a Kyrie is they actually know who they are, right?
Yeah, I saw that. Like, yeah, you made a great point on your show. Yes, I watched that. You made a great point.
So for people, and so people, you can listen to my show daily on Fox Sports Radio from 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, foxsportsradio.com. You can download the app. And the idea is this, like, Kyrie spent this entire season trying to convince us he's a leader. He's not.
Correct.
He tries to convince us he's a point guard.
Correct.
He's not. He tried to convince us, even in the playoffs, like, no, I can really play defense. I'm a great defensive player. Like, you're not a great defensive player. Like, stop. He kept switching and trying to guard Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, whereas Steph Curry, like, look, Steph's not a great on-ball defender.
He knows.
So, you know what he does? He doesn't guard. I ain't switching off on these dudes. Hell no.
Yeah.
Steph is not a ball distributing, point guard. He's not setting dudes up. Like, I'm just gonna be the best Steph Curry I can be.
Period.
And Sean Livingston's an example of that. Like, Sean Livingston's not a shooter, and you know what he's not doing? He ain't shooting jump shots. He's shooting 15 and in. He is deadly.
Deadly.
I can play 20 minutes, give you everything I got, move the ball. Yep. If I get my little push shot or my mid range pull up, I'm gonna take it. Otherwise, I'm good.
True pro.
Right? Which is a true pro. Okay, so that brings me to, if I'm Brooklyn, do I actually want Kyrie Irving?
I don't know. I don't think that's a good one, because you basically leaving a better team to go to a less qualified team that's up and coming. So it's like, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with that? And I don't think that Kyrie wanted to. I don't think he wants to be coached, Doug. I don't think he wants to be coached. I just think Kyrie is a roll the balls out type of guy and let me dance, man. I don't want you. Don't draw up no X's and O's for me. Just let me hoop. And I think I know Brad Stevens personally. He is a coach. He wants to coach players. Kyrie doesn't want to be coached. Bad combination.
Doug Gottlieb, Rashad Phillips here on the All Ball Podcast. Okay, so I've heard some crazy things. I've heard, like, the thing the Boston guys, a couple of Boston guys have told me is that, yes, he's constantly challenging authority, constantly challenging being coached. And he's also one of those guys that he's not an idiot, right? Like, let's not act like
he's a smart dude.
Well, I don't know if he's nearly as smart as he gets credit for, right? Like, he's one of those guys that, like, he's intelligent, right? But he thinks he's a Mensa member. And so he gets himself into conversations that he really doesn't know how to get out of.
That's above me.
And it's one of those guys, it's like the really, really attractive girl who's been told she's attractive, and so she walks around like she's a 10, and like, look, she's an 8, and she's an 8, but she's been told she's a 10. Whole life she's been told she's a 10. Kyrie's whole life he's been told that he's like a Mensa member, and so he really thinks it, when the truth is, like, he's a smart guy, but all those Celtics are smart guys, right? Like, Brown is that's kind of what they have. Like, Al Horford, smart guy.
They're cerebral guys.
And so you're walking into a room of intelligent people who are sitting there going, like, this dude doesn't know what he's talking about. And it's going to be fascinating to see if in his next landing spot, and it doesn't appear that he stays there, if he actually makes the team better. And I'm a huge Kyrie fan.
I like him as a hooper.
Yes, he does things that...
I like him as a hooper.
Rod Strickland's his godfather. That's the last guy I can remember of a point guard who could finish like that. Like,
Rod Strickland was amazing.
Amazing. But I don't know if he makes you better. And it's weird that he's gotten to this place where... coming into the year, I was told no way he does the LeBron thing because he doesn't like the LeBron noise and nonsense.
Not going
whatever.
To LA.
But that might actually be the best thing for him.
Yeah, but it goes back to your analogy. It's the I'm a 10, and with LeBron, I'm an 8.
Yeah.
So do you go to LA and be an 8, or do you go to Brooklyn and carry yourself like a 10? You know, so that's kind of the situation that he's in. You know, in this, I don't know if this term makes sense to a lot of people, but I'm going to say this. Kyrie Irving, to me, I think he's too talented. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Yep. You know what this happens in football, especially in high school and college football, where you have the quarterback that is so talented that they don't. This is one of the reasons I think some athletic quarterbacks, even the Johnny Manziels of the world, like Johnny, obviously the off the field stuff, but he was so physically gifted and so brazen, that he never had to sit there, watch film, buy in, and understand going through progressions, right?
Yes.
And so all of a sudden, when you get to big boy football and everybody can run, now you get exposed. Where that's the thing with Kyrie is, as talented as he is, there's a deficit there in terms of he didn't play a whole year at Duke, so he didn't really understand how to defend the ball.
The concepts.
Yes. And then he didn't understand how to lead because though LeBron leads in a different way than other guys, like he never kind of got – there was just all this kind of interrupted growth, right?
Yeah. The injury in college and I see that.
All right, let's get to this. Let's get to this year's NBA draft. This is where I love having you on. Do you take Zion number one without blinking?
Say that again. Do you take Zion number one where?
Without blinking, like, because I know you're a huge Ja Morant guy. Are you so brazen? Like, it's not going to happen. But if you know, just the dollars and cents of it with Zion Williamson filling seats and the, but if just from a pure analysis standpoint, would you take Ja ahead of Zion?
Yes, I will. Just from basketball standpoint, not including all ticket sales and marketability. I'm speaking from a basketball standpoint, from basketball eyes. I just think the point guard, I said this before, the point guards are like quarterbacks. You can't stabilize your franchise without a guy that throws touchdown passes. Ja Morant throws touchdown passes. And I think Zion Williamson is more – I know we're talking football. We're both football guys.
No,
I think Zion is more like the Jadavian Clowney, you know, like the Myles Garrett, like the pass rusher, you know, the guy that can rush, that can put his hand in the dirt and pass rush where he can stand up in the 3-4. That's what I think Zion is. So it's basically, are you going to pick the pass rusher that's maybe capable of getting 18 sacks, or do you draft a quarterback that's possible – of being Peyton Manning, That's how I look at it in football terms. So I like Ja Morant better from a basketball standpoint in regards to the ball is going to be in his hands. Zion is more, his success is going to be predicated on what other people do for him, the lobs he has to catch, putting him in position to score. Ja's going to create his own opportunities. He's going to make his own playground. So that's just, maybe that's just a point guard in me, but that's just kind of how I see the game.
I love the quarterback analogy. The thing I do think Zion brings, and is a hard one, is I think he's the, everyone in the league has been looking for the next Draymond, right? Yes, you want the next Harden and Curry and dominant ball handler, and but I do think those guys tend to come along more than another Draymond. And by Draymond, I mean, can you guard? I know you do, but can you guard one through five? He can. Can you handle the ball and make plays and initiate an offense? I think he can. And then can you score down the post? And I think he's actually way further along, maybe even now, than Draymond now. Like, Draymond doesn't really score down there at all. Doesn't even look to score down there.
Yeah, he's not a post guy.
No, but this guy is.
Yeah,
and,
he is.
And I get it. Like, I get it. In terms of, you know, the usage rate of Ja Morant and R.J. Barrett is going to be, if on a bad team, is going to be super high. And so their numbers should reflect not just scoring but assist. And you're going to run your offense through them.
Yeah.
But I do think that Zion is, there's a little bit of unicorn to him in that he can help you at both ends. And with the right team, he may be as or more valuable piece, even if the numbers don't reflect as such.
I understand that totally. I like Zion. I do. I just think there's a magnetism about him, and he has some intangibles that you can't teach. He's a great teammate. He's a great help defender. Obviously, he's a superb athlete, and he does. But you know, with Draymond, you know, he doesn't have Draymond's IQ. You know. He doesn't have that feel for the game yet, but I think that's something that he can grow into if you put the right guys around him.
All right, let's start to work our way down the first round of the draft. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We were all told RJ was the guy coming into the year.
Yeah.
And now we're all told, well, see, the problem was the spacing of college basketball. They didn't have enough shooting with Duke. And RJ's season didn't look as good as it could have because of the sport, because of the supporting cast. And everyone in New York is convinced you absolutely take RJ Barrett third. Mm-hmm. I see him as a bit mechanical. I also think, and here's my biggest issue with RJ, and like, look, if they're not going to get Kyrie, I guess it doesn't matter. But if he's not, if he doesn't have the ball in his hands playing downhill, what is he doing?
Yeah.
And in order to do that, you got to be Trae Young skill, or as a rookie, or you got to be, you know, are you eventually James Harden? Are you eventually Russell Westbrook? Are you eventually Steph Curry?
Yeah.
And I'm not willing to put that stamp. You evaluated him a ton.
Yeah.
What do you think of RJ?
I think the. First of all, I want to talk about the mentality that he has. I think he's the most competitive kid in the draft, alongside Nasir Little. I just think that RJ possesses a dog in him, because usually guys, and Doug, we know this, we're hoopers, but you know, usually guys that have a lot of dog in them, Doug, don't have a lot of skill, because they have to make up in those areas. You know, I play with a lot of guys. It's like, he can't really dribble that well, but he's a dog. He can't really run that fast, but he's a dog. He doesn't really shoot it that well, but he's a dog. And I think RJ falls under that definition. And I think he's a nosedive scorer. He's just straight down the line. Mm-hmm. He's great in transition. He's great initiating contact. But when the ball's not in his hands, I don't see enough skill level where he can help a team in regards to, can he stand in the corner and make some 3-point shots, because that's the way the game is. I see him more being a better defensive player than what we've given him credit for, And my NBA comparison, and a lot of people don't like this, and they've been mad at me, but I said that he reminds me of Kelly Oubre, and that wasn't a slight to him. It's just what I see him turning into in the NBA, a 3-and-D guy that can slash and get out in transition and be a 17-point scorer in the league. I don't see him averaging 26. He's not dynamic enough for that.
So if you don't do RJ Barrett, what would you do?
If I'm the Knicks, I would try to trade that pick.
Okay, so let's take the Knicks out of it. Okay. Who would be what prospect would you think is a better
Cam
prospect?
Reddish. Cam
I
Reddish.
Love Cam Reddish. This is let's get into this discussion because this hasn't been had by anybody else. I know you. I know you, you see him. You see Tracy McGrady, right?
I see some Tracy McGrady in him, Doug. I do. Maybe okay. I'm crazy,
I personally came in, and I was like, man, I love Cam Reddish. I've had people who talk to me say, don't. There's something about personality wise. They say like, he plays basketball, but he ain't. He doesn't. I don't know if it's love the game. There's again, these are reputation wise. There's a sense of a lack of toughness. There's a bit of an entitled. People think he's a little bit entitled. Like he's a guy who, when he pops out of the car and walks into the gym, you're like, damn, you know,
right? Like who is that?
Right, 211 pounds, 7 foot one wingspan, 8'9" standing reach. They don't love him in the NBA. They just think there's so many highs and so many lows. There's some pout to him, and that he's a guy who in an empty gym looks a whole lot better than when there's nine guys on the floor.
Now you know who you just described to me.
Who?
You just described Randy Moss to me. That's who you describe in football terms. I believe Cam Reddish is the Randy Moss of this draft. It's a lot of his red flags are narrative based. All the things that you said is the narrative that's been created around this kid. But he has all the natural physical gifts to be really great. So as a GM of an organization, I can't pass on a guy like that. If I whiff on this one, Doug, I just whiff on it. Because what you said still makes me want to draft him. It still makes me want to draft him. Like, this is a kid that could possibly be Tracy McGrady, or he can be Joe Johnson. And I got to swing at that one. And if I whiff, hey, man, look, the tape told me this. This is what I saw, and this is what his capabilities. All right, he turned into Joe Johnson. Okay, no problem. So that's kind of how I look at Cam Reddish. I just think that there's some prospects you have to swing the bat. And this is the prospect where you swing the bat, period. That's how I look at Cam Reddish.
You love Nasir Little, and I guess the problem with Nasir Little is there's just not that much there, right?
I see what you're saying. I understand what you got.
In terms of, like, I don't know what he do I think he will, he's got dog in him and he'll compete? Yeah.
Of course.
I do.
Of course.
But I think he was able to get away with things at a lower level because he was just bigger, stronger, more athletic, and the skills not there, the basketball intellect's not there. And, I mean, he's 6'4". And so I don't know what he is. Why do you have a greater affinity for Nasir Little than some people?
Well, he's bigger than 6'4", let me tell you that. He's about 6'7", 6'6" and a half. I watched Nasir in high school when he was here in Orlando, and I always liked his motor. I call him the engine because he never stops. I believe Nasir is one of those players that when he's put into the right situation, I think he flourishes. I don't think he's going to be a first option or second option guy. I think he falls under that, like, the Chris Middleton type role. Like, I mean, and I know Chris Middleton really stepped it up this year, but the guys that the, the, the third options to teams, that lockdown defender, that athlete that finishes plays. I think that's why I think the Atlanta Hawks is a perfect place for him at 10, because he won't be asked to do a lot, but he will contribute right away because of the engine that he has, the toughness that he has. He's a better 3-point shooter than what people give him credit for. And the workouts that he's had, he's already worked out for a few teams. The feedback that I've gotten from NBA teams is that he's a better shooter than what they thought. And I've had NBA people call me and tell me, Shot, he really can shoot the ball. So I told you. You know, so I just think that he's going to be a contributor. You know, I don't see
I think that's a great way to put it. This is how the draft has been told to me. Like, you have two dudes at the top who people think can be an all-star. Mm-hmm. You have a couple of guys in the middle, and somebody is going to be a really good player. And then there's a bunch of guys that'll play a while in the NBA. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to be great players, but they're not going to be bad players. You have to change your perspective on it, right? Like, the idea that you're going to get an all-star in the middle of the first round is highly unlikely this year.
Correct.
And instead, get a guy who fits, who helps, and you know what he's going to be. Yes.
Who helps? I think Nasir Little is a safe pick. Like, when you draft Nasir Little, whatever team drafts him, sleep well at night. Don't say, oh, I think we should have got this guy. Go to bed, get your 8 hours of sleep.
What, Bol Bol's interesting. So here's the Bol Bol thing, right? So he's 7'2" with shoes on, 7'7" wingspan, 9'7.5" reach, but he doesn't he's not really a rim protector, but and he's only 208 pounds. 7'2", 208. Okay. But he can really shoot. Like,
he can thump it.
He can really shoot. And, you know, whereas other guys get to the NBA and have to learn to shoot, like, this dude can actually really shoot the basketball.
He can thump it. Yeah.
Right. So, what's his value in the, like, can he be a starter in the NBA, in your opinion?
I don't think he starts as a rookie, but I do think if he can stay healthy, I said this before. I think with Bobo, I think he may be. Sometimes I think you're too tall for the game, the way he plays. Like, he's 7'2", and he's trying to play like he's 6'1". That's taxing on your legs. Ask Porzingis, Kevin Durant with the calf strain. I just think when you're 7 feet and you play like you're 6'1", you're susceptible to get injured more. And I think that's why he had the foot injury. But I do think that he has some marketable skills. Because the way the NBA is played with the spacing, I think he's going to be an asset to a team because he can knock down some shots. I probably wouldn't take him with the top 8 picks, but right after 10, 11, 12 is where I would definitely swing the bat at a player like that because of his, you know, he's 7'2". You can't pass up a 7'2 guy that can actually put the ball on the floor, got a little flair to his game, and he can make shots.
Brandon Clark's a freak athlete, you know, a guy who grew late. He's older, transferred, and he has that motor like you talked about, Nasir Little.
He's got
a great motor, but he's a net zero with his, you know, with his wingspan to his height.
Yeah, he got short arms. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got the T-Rex thing going. And he's only 207 pounds. And I loved him in college. I just don't know. Like, the thing about everybody talks about, like, this Draymond. Like, dude, Draymond's got crazy long arms.
He got long arms.
And crazy basketball IQ.
Crazy IQ.
Right? So, is Brandon Clark an NBA player?
That's a tough one for me because I don't really know what he is. You know, he's in my top 20 rankings because he's just such a good college player and he's such a freak athlete. I think when kids are great athletes, but you don't know what to do with them basketball wise, the best thing you can do for them when they get to the NBA is make them defensive stoppers until you figure it out.
Yeah, but like, can you be a defensive stopper? Can you be a defensive stopper when you don't have long arms? Like,
well, he got, but
six eight and a quarter wingspan is not going to, that's not going to scare people.
No, it's not. But I just think he has terrific lateral speed. He's a fantastic athlete. I think he doesn't get enough credit for his motor. He can beat you to spots. So, like I said, when you can't figure out what to do with them, the best thing you can do is make them defensive stoppers until you figure it out. And I think that's his best suit is like, hey, you know what? Come in here. I need you to guard the toughest guys. When you check into the game, I need you to guard Draymond Green. When you check in the game, I need you to guard. I need you to harass James Harden. You're a little taller than him. You give those type of guys assignments until they figure out what they're going to be on the offensive side of the ball. And I think he's a question mark offensively, but I think defensively he's just a good rotation guy that can fit in.
I feel like DeAndre Hunter, like we know exactly what he's going to be, right?
He's a 3-and-D guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a little bit stiff.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's right now, he's not a true, three-point shooter, but yeah, like he's a rotation guy, maybe a starter on a good team in the NBA, right?
Yeah, he doesn't pop. He doesn't pop on tape. He doesn't, like, if you watch his tape, he's not going to pop. You know, it's just like, okay, good player, Good player, makes the right decisions, knows what he's doing, terrific defender. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Bruce Bowen, kind of that type of guy that's going to play hard, going to come to practice, going to be a great locker room guy. So he's a safe, I think he's a safe pick. But
doesn't feel like he'll require a ton of maintenance, right? He'll just, he'll get better. Doesn't require the ball a bunch to be who he can be.
Yeah, like I'm not going to high-five.
Like we talked about R.J. Barrett. Like R.J. Barrett, if he doesn't have the basketball, what is he? If you never, if you don't run any single play for DeAndre Hunter,
he's okay.
He'll be fine. He'll be fine. Yeah. He'll shoot it when he's open, and if not, he'll move it and he'll rebound it. But there's definitely a lower ceiling there than a bunch of these other guys we're talking about.
You're right. Like I said, DeAndre. Like if I'm the GM, you're a GM of a team, and we're working with the same NBA team, and I say, Doug, let's draft him. I'm not going to high five you once we draft him. It's just like we played it safe on that one, Doug. I think that's the kind of prospect he is.
Ty Jerome, does he make it in the league?
I do. I think he finds a home. Great
so
footwork.
Slow.
I know, but he got great feet. He's slow, but he can get to his spots.
He can get to his spots in college, and kind of like everybody says, Grievous Vasquez. Like okay,
yeah.
Okay, maybe. And like yeah. I did notice Grievous Vasquez had he played in the NBA, but it's not like he was a longtime NBA player. He has a negative wingspan.
You a wingspan guy, see.
I'm just telling you what like NBA guys like I call him up and like I was like Ty Jerome, like what do you do with Ty Jerome? Like, man, I'd love to have him on my team, but dude has a negative wingspan. Is slow and got away with like shot clock heaves in college because he just shot over smaller guys. Like,
yeah, he got thrown off. He can't tie his shoes. I get it, but I
negative wingspan, Rashad.
I know
negative wingspan.
Negative. Yeah,
I'm not a wingspan guy, but when you start going T-Rex on me, I'm like, okay, that's a little
different. Yeah, like you need help tying your shoes, and that's a problem. But no, I just think that I just think that. I think he may go in and out the G League, but I just think that he has there's some skills there. Let's give the kid some credit. There's some skills there for Jerome.
There's a lot of people are going to talk. I want to talk about R.J. Hampton in a second.
Okay.
But Darius Bazley,
Yeah.
He did this thing where he was going to go to, first he was going to go to Ohio State, then he's going to go to Syracuse.
And Syracuse.
Then he's going to the G League. Instead, he sat out for a year. He's a great measurement guy. Measurement guy.
Yep. Yes, he is.
Can he play?
Yes, he is. I think he's going to have a little. I think that the transition to the NBA is going to be a tough one. I think training camp for him is going to be a wake up call. You know, like, hey, man, these guys are faster and stronger in person. He kind of gives me that. He kind of gives me a Thaddeus Young feel. A guy that can just kind of more of a utility athlete type dude. So I guess another guy that can probably, you know, be a roster guy. That I don't think he'll make an impact on the NBA right away. I think it's a guy, this is a more of a, like my D'Angelo Russell scale. I think he's a year three, year four guy. I don't think he comes into the NBA and he's just windmilling on people. And if I'm wrong, I'll totally admit it, but I just don't see him going right into the NBA and he's just catching windmills and, you know, doing, I think it's going to be a learning curve for him.
Okay, so give me a guy who people aren't talking enough about that you believe is going to be, like, it's been established you're a Cam Reddish guy. Established. Okay? Got it. Love it.
Yeah.
Hashtag talk soon. Okay? Give me somebody a little more off the radar. Like, that dude was all everything, played at Duke, going to be a top 10 pick or so.
Yeah.
Give me somebody who go ahead.
Sure. Jalen Hands, UCLA. Jalen Hands, the point guard out of UCLA. I think this kid has some dynamics. He has some NBA qualities about him that I believe that a team can use him, and he'll be a good backup player. But I think eventually he can work himself into a starting lineup down the line. I just like what the kid brings to the table.
He's fascinating because
He
went to, I don't want to sell out who told me this, but he went to an NBA workout last year, mm-hmm. and excuse my French, but he was an asshole. He had an arrogance to him. He actually mm-hmm. talked back to the coaches there. Like, they were just, could not get him out of the building fast enough. And mm-hmm. I don't know if that was the case other places, but he did. There were some people that are like, dude, I'm not in jail. And I thought, you know, look, anybody can be humbled. You have to go back to college. You know, if you have perspective, and it's hard when you're in college to go like, hey, my coach got fired. And we were told, like, look, UCLA, one of the reasons they were bad was they didn't have a point guard, and he was their point guard, right? So, but I do kind of agree. I'm actually going to agree with you here. I don't think he'll ever be a starter. He might. I could be wrong. But I think if put in the right set of circumstances where he's got to buy in defensively, and then he just has to get into the mindset of, like, I'm just going to come in and change the pace of a game. And whether it's, you know, whether the there's a Patty Mills, and he's not as skilled as Patty was coming out.
Right, he doesn't shoot it like Patty, but he's bigger.
Doesn't shoot it like that. But he has a Russell Westbrook type of athleticism. Like, he has
ridiculously athletic.
He could be an outstanding defender.
Absolutely.
He can pass, but he's not a passer. He can score. He can shoot, but he's not a shooter. I think it just comes down to, can he deal with less touches, less minutes, higher level of competition.
and be
more efficient? If he does so, I think he could be an NBA player for a long time.
I agree.
But there also is, like, he's got to have been humbled by, all right, now he's going to the NBA draft. He's probably going to be a second-round pick. Does he understand that the league is telling him what his role has to be, and does he buy into that? Because everyone thinks, like, yeah, I could do that. If you just tell me I'm going to play 20 minutes and I'm just going to go get buckets and defend my ass off, I could do that.
Right.
Then all of a sudden you're sitting there for the first 30 minutes, and then you come in and you're playing against better competition, and you got to, like, but I think the spacing of the NBA should help him. And I think the fact that he doesn't have to truly be a leader, because he's not a natural leader, I think that could help him.
I totally agree, Doug. I think that the humbling situation that he had last year, I think he came out better. And I think he's ready to embrace and kind of claw his way into the NBA. So I think he's prepared himself mentally for that. And I think he's hungry. And he was a kid. And like I said, he has some dynamics about him that you can't teach. He has some speed. He's a good passer. He's great in transition. And what I like about him is he's terrific in passing lanes. So like you said, I think he can be a great defensive point guard. I think he's better than Chris Dunn. And Chris Dunn was
He wasn't better than Chris Dunn in college defensively.
Not in college. No. But and this is no slight to Chris Dunn. This is me talking about how good I think Jalen Hans could be. I think he's a little better than Chris Dunn. He's a little faster. He's a better athlete. I think Chris Dunn is obviously a better defender because he's been in the league. But I just think he fits in that mold. And Chris Dunn, guys were so high on him coming out of college.
No doubt.
Guys were high. I wasn't high on Chris Dunn coming out of college. I was like, I don't know.
Only from the perspective of, I do think that defending at the point guard position, you have to be so good to be hidden nowadays, right? Like,
correct.
And he didn't have to be hidden. We hadn't necessarily seen the peak of Chris Dunn because of the repeated shoulder injuries early on.
Yep.
You know, but you're right. Like I was higher on him than I should have been. And
I wasn't.
Yeah. Well, you nailed that one.
I liked him, but I was like, I didn't like the top 10. I'm like, nah, I see him like late 20s, but everybody was like, oh, he's a lottery pick. I'm like, I don't see. I watched the tape. It just didn't jump. But I think Jalen Hans is a little better than Chris Dunn, and Chris Dunn was a lottery pick. That's just what I see.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you there, but I think Hans, and look, I'm a West Coast guy, so the last thing I'm going to do is say kids from San Diego, you know, but there was an intangible of leadership and toughness and lack of ability to allow your team to lose, whereas everybody points to the video of Jalen Hans picking Moses Brown's chin up.
Yeah,
you know?
Moses. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But like that's one moment, right? Like they lost so many games that they should have and did not compete.
Wasn't a good team though, Doug. Wasn't a good team. Wasn't well coached. The locker room was a mess. Just a bad
again,
situation.
None of that falls on, would you allow your team's locker room to fall apart?
No.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't. No, but I don't think that we should give all to Jalen Hans. I just think
it's really important that you point that out. It's a really good point. I'm not putting everything, but I'm also not going to put nothing on Jalen Hans. Right? When I'm in Vegas and I'm watching them play, I'm like, man, what is missing with this team? And every text and every scout's like, I ain't got no point guard. I'm like, well, the guy bringing the ball up the court is supposedly an NBA prospect, and he's their point guard. Like, no, they ain't got a point guard. They don't have leadership. And you know, they had clearly tuned Alford out. Well, that's that, you know, somebody's got to be the alpha in the room that says, like, hey, fellas, it never really turned. I would agree with you. Wasn't a good team. Collection of parts of all guys that thought they were NBA players.
Yeah.
And he's probably the only guy that gets drafted.
Correct. It was just a bad mix of players, and it wasn't a good mix. That's all.
No.
And he's a quarterback, so he's got to put his face. He gets the you get to throw darts at his face because he was
all right,
the quarterback
last thing. Last thing, RJ Hampton, who super skilled, again, kind of in the, and I'm not going to compare him to RJ Barrett in terms of his body and his, but it's the idea that's how he plays is the same way RJ Barrett played coming up with ball in his hands, dominant ball handler. What do you think of the decision to go to New Zealand?
well, from the standpoint of, and I played in Australia, so, I mean, it's to go to a country where they speak English. They're going to pay you good money. The season is short. The weather is nice. I think that, you know, it's a no-brainer in that regard. I think he'll play well there, and I think that it won't be as strainful on his body. They won't practice up like for 3 hours a day. So I think that's a good decision on his part. The kid is a top 10 player. I don't think he really wanted to do the NCAA, obviously. For whatever reasons he had, And I just think that that's just another avenue. I think he's exercising his rights at the end of the day. That's how I look at it.
Nobody's disputing his let's take it from a basketball and lifestyle perspective. Like, I love the idea of New Zealand. Sounds like a great culture.
It is.
And I do like the idea of playing against older guys. And what no one's willing to say is, like, look, he couldn't go to Spain or Italy or Turkey or Russia because those teams wouldn't play him. They want to win, and you're not going to win with an 18-year-old kid. So this is a level of competition which is low enough, and a team that's not competing for a championship where he's only going to go there if he's promised he's going to play 30 minutes a game, which is great, play against older guys.
Right.
My issue with it is, I just don't see how that absolutely prepares you better for the NBA. And in addition to which,
I understand that. I see what you're saying, though.
Like, he went to Kansas, okay?
Right.
And we operate in this, I think some of the media operates, huh?
I said use another school, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
Why use another school?
Well, Kansas, I just think that that's just, they struggle with shooting guards. Quentin Grimes is already transferring out of there. He's supposed to be a top 10 pick a year ago.
Yeah, but Quentin Grimes wasn't any good. They don't struggle with shooting guards. They struggle with guys that aren't that good. He just wasn't that good. That's all. Quentin Grimes, like, if you ask those guys, you'd be like, well,
he didn't play well. I agree. He didn't play well.
He just wasn't that good. They never, like, there was a kid, Agbaji was supposed to redshirt. He's a shooting guard. He was fine. He was just better. He just worked and was better and was tougher and was smarter and beat him out. That's really what happened.
So, I agree. How about if you're not that good? Then if you're not that good in your heart, don't go to Kansas. That's what I got you.
But we operate in this world, like, not you and I, but
I understand.
Media, social media, and fans especially, where they're like, well, the coaches, and I do agree the coaches should get more time around their guys. Okay, but if you've ever been to Kansas, I want you to think about this. They have a dorm right next to their gym. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And the dorm has a three-quarter court basketball court in it. So there is literally not a moment in the day you can't go get shots. They have chef in the dorm. They have a chef in the dorm. Whenever they're hungry, call them up. Let's eat.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
They can walk over. They can walk over, and then they have a practice facility, which is as good as any NBA practice facility. Mm-hmm. They have a strength coach, and she's as good as anybody who does it. Look at the bodies that they've produced. You know, the improvement of guys have gone there. And then you get a chance to play for a guy that's going to make you better, going to make you tougher. And, by the way, he lets dudes play. Like, he's not right. He doesn't, they don't try and go get, you know, blood out of a rock.
No, I got it. Yeah. Yep. That's
and,
true.
And
that's
you get true. A chance. And then there's the ancillary benefits of being a part of one of the great basketball cultures and histories and traditions and playing. Mm-hmm. How is playing 30 games, right? Like, maybe 40 games against men, but missing out on the training aspect. How, in your opinion, like, if it's your son, what do you think is better? And look, you can even point out, if you want to point out that Kansas hasn't developed shooting guards from your perspective, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Ben McLemore, right?
Like, Ben McLemore,
He hasn't had a good NBA career, but it wasn't like going to Kansas hurt his draft stock, but okay.
True.
So even if you hold that, if you have a son, what's a better option in your opinion?
I probably will send my son to college. I'm an NCAA guy, so I would send my son to college because I just think that there's things that outside of basketball that you get as a person in college that you can't get anywhere else.
Agreed.
So it's just the overall. Let's just talk about. I don't want to sound corny here, but this is real because I mean my oldest daughter's going to college next year. I'm about education. So at the end of the day, you can't trade that education in for nothing. You have to be able to get your education. And I'm big on that. So I would send my son to school and say, look, man, you're going to go, even if you're one and done, you're going to get this 1 year of education. You're going to take some good classes. And when you get drafted, you're still going to graduate college because you're always one play away from never playing again. So that's me, the parent talking, you know. So
it's interesting, you know, He said, look, my parents both have college degrees. His mom has an advanced degree. And
great.
And I mean, he said education is important, and I can always go back for that. Now, I would point out, and it's really important for people to understand, like in college, you actually can go, if you go that one and done route, you can go back anytime you want, and you're on scholarship anytime you want. Whereas doing it on your own is far more difficult in terms of just getting into school and deciding what you can do. But whatever. But I thought the other parts that you were starting to point out, which are really like, there is something to, you grow up in Dallas and you go to Lawrence, Kansas. And so you're in the States and you're away from home, but you're not an adult yet. You have this, you're around 18 to 22 year olds. And like, you kind of got to figure out socially how to get along. Right. And I think that's better and healthier. You do. It's not just like what you learn in class per se may not prepare you for your NBA future. And maybe that's another step that colleges should take is like, hey, should there be a pre-professional degree where you can learn about, you know, taxes and balancing your checkbook and investments and all the things it takes when you are your own LLC.
Yeah, correct.
But there's a lot of education that goes on that's not inside of a book that you can only get when you're on a college campus. And anybody who's at college kind of knows this. And I actually think like the scholarship thing is kind of perfect because could you pay a kid more money? Like, I guess you could. But what's the point? Like, there's no, if you give a kid $5,000, he's going to want 10. If you give a kid $10,000, he's going to want 20. Like, there's no. And the point is now they have enough. They never have, like, you go to Kansas, you get cost of attendance, you have money in your pocket. It's not like your parents don't have the ability to send you $100 or a couple $100. Like, you're fine.
You're fine.
You get $5,000-$6,000 a year with the cost of attendance, plus the scholarship you already get.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you already, well, he wouldn't get a Pell, obviously. But anyway, the point is, you got a little money, but you also have to learn to budget that. Right? You have to learn, like, all right, this is how much I got, this is how long I have it. And I got to figure out how do I make this work? Like, that's another part of the education of being away that we just completely diminish. And I disagree with it, even though I've seen so many. And yes, you are. It's not just your one play away, but like, all right, maybe he is a top 10 pick and maybe he has a bunch of money. But he gets done playing, and let's say he gets done playing at 30 years old. He doesn't have the NBA career he will want to have, right?
Yeah, and you need
70 more years to live, and you skipped over part of your life that's fun and also like an educational experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there's different cases, but if it was me personally with my son, it's like, man, go to college, do your year. Get your education. It's going to be an experience that you're going to love. Trust me, Dad's been there. You'll love it, and then we'll get to the NBA when it's our turn. That will be my. But I don't knock RJ's his family's decision. I support it because I kind of understand what they're doing. I understand both sides.
Yep.
And I wish nothing but the best for him. And I think he's going to be terrific over there in Australia. They're going to love him in New Zealand.
Look, I would agree with you in terms of it seems like they put a lot of thought into it and to that part, and they understand the pitfalls of it. They understand there's a reason they're doing it. I disagree with it, but my issue with it is like, dude, don't string schools along when you signed a contract a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one's going to, like, all these coaches, we make them out like they're these unreasonable dudes. Like, hey, you picked up the phone and called Penny or called Bill Self when you sign the contract and go, hey, I'm going to do
they'll
this thing in New
it.
Zealand. They'd be like,
they'll
all right, good luck.
Right.
On to the next guy. But when when we have to hold a scholarship for you, you know, have campus visits, continue to recruit you, put in that time and effort. I don't think that's and again, I don't necessarily put it on him. That's more on his parents. Once you sign that contract, your parents need to go like, hey, pick up the phone, call those coaches, thank them for what they've done and move on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you win some and you lose some. I think, from both sides.
Hey, man, I appreciate your time. You know I love your work. And for people who want to follow you, for people who want to follow you and get more stuff from Rashad Phillips, how can they do so?
You can reach me at on Twitter, RP3Natural. And you can subscribe to my YouTube channel, which is Sports Talk 2319. And you can find me on Instagram, Rashad Phillips 2319.
23-19 is the number of points that he scored as a star at the University of Detroit Mercy. Do I go Detroit Mercy or do I go Detroit?
Either works. Either works.
All right. Hey, man, love your time. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate you, Doug. Talk soon.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
That's Rashad Phillips. And look, to echo his thoughts, and we don't agree on every player, obviously, but it's great for a guy who's so invested in the sport to discuss all the guys in the sport. My lasting thoughts on the NBA Finals are this. I think Steph's amazing. Obviously, if they don't have Klay and they don't have KD, they're not winning this series. It would be incredibly competitive to watch and compelling to watch them to watch them compete, the two of them, without KD. And remember, like, this a little bit like when they lost Andrew Bogut, going back to when they lost to the Cavs, was that in 2016? Like, let's not underestimate losing your best rim-protecting big guy who is coming into his own and replacing him with DeMarcus Cousins, who I don't know if he'll ever be back to what he was, and I don't even know if what he was fits in what the Warriors are, but he's not even there yet, you know? And then you have a hobbled Andre Iguodala. The question to me is, can they break out the ultimate weapon? And can KD come back, and can he play? If he plays, they win. If he doesn't, oh, it's going to be a dogfight. And then, you know, I thought the Raptors had to extend themselves a great deal in order to win that game, more so than they thought to win that game, but so too did Steph Curry. Like, does Steph Curry, when KD comes back, is he out of gas? Because to take on that burden for the last three games, frankly, the last seven games, but the last three games, and then yesterday, take on that burden, a double team everywhere you go, getting banged, getting battered. And I know the game is not as physical as it used to be, but that's a lot. Like, yes, to echo Rashad's points, and I think it's more because of the three-pointer, but his points do seem more devastating. You come down, you got three guys on him, and he goes through his legs behind his back and jumps up and makes a shot, and like, you're like, oh, God, what happened? What happened? Like, all of that is great. But it also, there's a lot of energy expended by him, and that energy can wear thin. Like, you can kind of run out of gas by doing it because you had to put so much into it. And then I also pointed out, and this is kind of one of the lost discussions on analytics, is that so oftentimes we take the effective field goal percentage and we use that calculation and say, hey, look, if you make this number of threes, it actually drives up your field goal percentage. Number of possessions for the other team on long carom rebounds. You know, you come down and you go 1-on-3, you jump up, you miss that 3-point shot, and the team gets it. And because everybody else is hunting an offensive rebound, you give up an easy transition basket. That's an easy shot for them. They don't expend a ton of energy. And there is a certain deflating aspect to it from your own team when your own star isn't hitting and he's casting up these big shots. So this is fun because it feels like it's going to be three different series in one, right? There's the first part of the series and potentially game four when you don't have KD, but you have Klay and you have Steph. Then you have the Steph kind of trying to do it on his own. And then maybe you get all three back together for, if not four, five, six, and potentially seven. You know, now it's, you start to see kind of how it all, the reason that it's been relatively unbeatable. And then there's this last part of the discussion. And this part, I'm torn. Andre Iguodala, because he has played so well in so many big spots for the Warriors, has now entered this conversation of being a Hall of Famer. And we've always operated in the media under the idea that Draymond Green is a Hall of Famer. And I guess my question is this. Like, if you're really a Hall of Famer and you're Draymond Green in what should be the athletic prime of your career, and you don't have Klay and you don't have KD, and we're told by some, hey, the reason he doesn't score as much is because that's not what he has to do on their team. But you're still a guy that no one guards. You're still a guy that they dare to shoot, right? So on one hand, I look at last night and I'm like, if they're Hall of Famers, shouldn't they have more impact? Even with Andre Iguodala banged up at this age in his career. On the other hand, would I rather have Andre Iguodala on my team or Tracy McGrady on my team? I'd rather have Andre Iguodala. Would I rather have Draymond Green or, I mean, in many ways, I guess I'd rather have him than Reggie Miller, who was only third team All-NBA once. So who would I rather have? Because one guy feels like helps me win more in Draymond and Iguodala, and even though another guy is a far more effective, dominant scorer in Tracy McGrady, but he never won. Didn't get out of the first round of the playoffs. I mean, until he's with the Spurs late, whatever, that doesn't really count. Or Reggie Miller. That's a hard one. But I tend to believe that if you are in fact a Hall of Famer and other guys go down, and when called upon, you should be able to pick up the load. And last night was game three. Those two were incapable of picking up the load, and it was Steph versus the world, right? So do I think they'll get in? Draymond will get into the Hall of Fame. Iguodala feels like prisoner of the moment, right? And I know that he was an all-star once when he was with Philadelphia. But like the point is, like when he was with Philadelphia, they were basically a 500 team when he scored all those points. As he evolved in his career and became more of a Swiss Army knife, now he was a lot more effective on better teams, but all of a sudden now he's a Hall of Famer? Like that feels like a definite leap. I think he's brilliant. I think he's incredibly competitive. He has competitive greatness. I think he's a big part of why they've won championships. But that doesn't necessarily, like, what's the reward for that? Three championship rings, potentially four, maybe even more, and a lot of money. But Hall of Fame, I thought that was held for, you know, the five best guys in the sport over a couple of year period you got in, you know? And over the lifetime of your career, if you're a perennial all-star, always in that discussion of one of the best players in your position in the sport, that's the way you get in. So listen, you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show every day, 3 to 6 Eastern Time, 12 to 3 Pacific. You can download the podcast as well, wherever you download this podcast. In the meantime, appreciate you listening. Hope you enjoyed the prep for the NBA draft, the discussion on the NBA Finals. Keep it tuned right here for the next edition of All Ball. I'm Doug Gottlieb.